Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding. This week, we're bringing you three collaborative podcasts. First, How the Song of Summer Died with Today Explained. On Wednesday, we'll be talking about the origins of the synthesizer and this very podcast through the music of Wendy Carlos on the show This Is Love. And on Friday, we're on Vergecast talking AI in music. How bad is it? And is it possible that AI music copyright lawsuits could upend the entire artificial intelligence industry? Those are our three stories. First, the death of the Song of Summer on Today Explained with Sean Ramaswamy and Brittany Spanos.
Once upon a time, Disney was a motion picture studio in a sea of Hollywood studios doing something nobody else was doing.
Disney's business is memory making. Disney's business is tradition.
But here's the thing about kingdoms. They don't last forever. To survive, Disney had to grow. But has that tremendous growth eroded what made Disney, Disney?
And I don't know if the world cares that this is a Disney movie anymore.
I'm Joe Adalian. I'm hosting Land of the Giants, The Disney Dilemma, from Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. Follow Land of the Giants wherever you listen to hear new episodes every Wednesday.
I got a theory. I think the song of the summer is dead. Yes. Let's wind it back to 2003. This song was inescapable. Sometimes it still is. A few years later, another banger with Beyoncé's Husband, then Black Eyed Peas, Carly Rae, Blurred Lines, One Dance, Despacito, Beasts, all of them. And then in 2019, we get what I think was our last song of the summer, the series finale. Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. The biggest songs on the charts in subsequent summers just haven't been as big, IMHO. Did you hear Rockstar everywhere you went? Or Morgan Wallen, that guy who loves the N-word? Yeah, you know you love to fight. Please! The Song of the Summer is dead.
You're usually right, but I think you're wrong.
We'll see about that on Today Explained.
Woo-hoo. Stop.
Today Explained, Sean Ramaswamy here once again with NYU professor Charlie Harding, co-host of the Switched on Pop podcast. He's got some thoughts on why last year's supposed Song of the Summer and I just don't connect.
I'd say that there's three reasons for why you don't feel connected to Morgan Wallen's Last Night. The first reason is that you got old. The neuroscientist Daniel J. Levitin has a study that shows that our musical tastes really peak ages 14 to 24, and so you're simply outside of that range. I'm sorry, Sean. But baby, something's telling me this ain't over yet. No way. But there are other reasons why Morgan Wallen might not connect with you. I think part of it is that maybe country isn't your thing. And country is having a meteoric rise. Like, from 2017 to 2022, only 2% of the songs on the Hot 100 Billboard's major chart were country. Last year, 25% of songs on the Hot 100 were country. Last summer, third reason why you might not have connected, last summer, country also became political. In fact, I think the charts became political, like everything that is polarized in our country. Not only did we have Morgan Wallen, who was making a comeback after saying the N-word publicly, but we also had songs like Try That in a Small Town by Jason Aldean. Got a gun that my granddad gave me. They say one day they're gonna round up. Well, that shit might fly in the city. Good luck. Try that in a small town. We had Oliver Anthony Music. Rich Men North of Richmond. Cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, cause the rich men, north of Richmond. These like hyper-politicized songs, and so maybe you were just feeling like, I'm not feeling the country right now. So these are why I think you might have not connected last year.
Listen, Charlie, I like Bud Light and pickup trucks as much as the next guy. But I think these songs are popular.
Yes.
But they're not. The song of the summer needs to be universal. Isn't that the thing? I mean, Old Town Road was technically a country song, but
yeah.
The difference there was like kids were dancing to it. They were playing it at clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone heard it. There was a video that was hilarious. It was in commercials. That was a song of the summer.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse.
When I teach Old Town Road to my students at NYU, they're like, oh, that old song? Just saying, we may be outside of peak culture, Sean.
Let's go back. I went back to 2003, but how old is the Song of the Summer, Charlie?
The Song of the Summer is an ancient institution. Every season needs a song. In my digging, I could find newspapers from the 1800s where people were writing songs of summer, poems, lyrics, and so on. There's a really good Vox explainer by our former colleague Phil Edwards from 2016.
Love Phil.
He found a New York Tribune story from 1910 asking, about this time, look out for the Song of Summer. What will it be this season? Will it be humorous? Will it be sentimental? Will it be unmitigated trash?
Mm.
They named the 1909 Song of Summer, My Wife's Gone to the Country. Hooray, hooray.
Classic.
My wife's gone to the country. Hooray, hooray.
But I feel like it really solidifies as a thing when Billboard launches its Hot 100 chart in 1958, and there is an official bean counter, and we can chart who is the biggest song of each season.
What was the first song of the summer in 1958 once we had the beans counting?
It wasn't Elvis. It wasn't the Everly Brothers.
Huh.
It was Domenico Modugno's Volare.
Ah, of course it was.
Volare.
Italian ballad with some R&B piano vibes.
I don't know that I remember this from 1958, to tell you the truth.
You're not that old, Sean. Pretty old, but not that old. I mean, you could say in 1965, Sonny and Cher had I Got You, Babe.
Oh, now we're talking.
I got you, babe.
How about 1977? Best of My Love by The Emotions?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I feel like if you go to 1984, you could fight between Prince's When Doves Cry,
like when doves cry.
And Tina Turner's What's Love Got to Do with It.
What's love got to do with it?
Oh my gosh, what a year 1984 was. And then the 90s, you got to have like what? Like Spice Girls' Wannabe, maybe the Macarena in there?
I mean, those are great hits, but I feel like 1997 was the year of Mbop by Hanson.
Oh my gosh, yes it was. But is there always a clear song of the summer? I mean, I showcased a couple of years where, in my personal opinion, there was. But
yeah.
I'm sure there's someone out there in the listening audience who's like, I don't remember Umbrella by Rihanna and Jay-Z. I guess that person probably exists.
I tend to think of more songs of summer than necessarily song of summer, partially to be representative of like what people are listening to in Brooklyn is different than Miami, is different than Houston. And so whatever your community is listening to, that's going to be your song of summer. And probably in the era of like mass media monoculture, we just weren't as talented at capturing people's collective listening. Sure, maybe they were being broadcast more the same stuff, but you didn't know what people were playing back to back on their boombox. Now we can actually count exactly what people are listening to on streaming services.
Mm.
We have moved from the broadcast era of mass media to a fractured media landscape based on demand and algorithmic media. We're more fed our niche interests through playlists, which are disseminated to us. You can see the trend of people's listening fragment even by looking at things like album sales over the years. In 2003, the biggest album of the year was 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Trying, sold 6.5 million copies.
Hell yeah.
Go, Sean. It's your birthday.
Fast forward a decade, Justin Timberlake's 2020 experience, 2.4 million.
I can't wait till I get you on for good looking.
Fast forward just to last year, Taylor Swift's Midnights, 2.8 million. It's me. So album sales today actually do also reflect streaming. A certain number of streams actually is the equivalent of an album sale. So it's not just that people have moved from buying albums to streaming songs. It's also that I think our listening has fragmented into different communities and different genres.
And this is why you see the occasional think piece, reflection, essay, you know, roundtable saying that the song of the summer is dead. I've seen one from our colleagues at Vulture. I think Rolling Stone published one as well. When you see those, Charlie Harding, are you like, come on, guys, take it easy on Song of the Summer? Because it feels like this is not your opinion.
I think that big cultural moments can still exist. Uh-huh. Elections, insurrections, football's doing amazing. Super Bowl, depending on how you count, is at an all-time high in its viewership. Really, songs are doing better and lasting longer on the Hot 100 than they are at any other point in history. Mm. And so I think whether it's, you know, a Taylor Swift album that takes over the entire chart for a moment,
trying to cover my job,
or, you know, a viral TikTok song that can last for longer than you might expect, it's definitely possible for a song to break through.
I'm glad you brought up the charts, Charlie, because I feel like the charts are part of the problem here.
Yeah.
Because the charts, now that they account for streaming, are like no longer fully reflective of the moment like they used to be.
No.
Is that wrong?
You're totally wrong. I totally object. The charts right now reflect that we have a very diverse set of listening. Like, if you go to the Billboard's Hot 100, which counts radio airplay, physical album sales, and streaming, it shows that, wow, we are listening to a broad array of things. The number one song in the country right now is a bar song by Shaboozey.
Someone pour me up a double shot of whiskey. They know me and Jay Daniels got a history.
This one I know. Tipsy. I'm not that old.
Yeah. Black man leading the country charts and the Hot 100. We also have legacy big three rapper Kendrick Lamar and his diss track, Not Like Us.
We made a whole show about it.
A great episode. You also made a great episode about pop princess Sabrina Carpenter and her song Espresso.
So you can see.
Thanks for the plug.
It's a good episode. We've got alt folk music by Hozier.
You're too sweet for me. I take my whiskey.
We've got drag dressing artist Chapel Rowan. Like, we've got so many different things happening in the top 10. I think that it really actually represents all sorts of different communities of listening. I think you shouldn't stress about what everyone is listening to. I think you should pay attention to what your friends and community are connecting with.
We're going to come back with Charlie Harding and Brittany Spanos from Rolling Stone to talk about what songs your friends and community are singing this summer on Today Explained.
Are they bumping that beat?
Hi, this is Kara Swisher, host of On with Kara Swisher from New York Magazine and Vox Media. And wow, what a month we've had. There's so much going on right now. Two ongoing wars overseas, deepening political turmoil here in the U.S., and a presidential election that might now be in flux. Well, we've had a great lineup of guests on the show to talk about it all, from the U.S. ambassador to NATO, Julianne Smith, to Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, to my latest episode, an interview with Rachel Maddow of MSNBC. Knock that off my bucket list. I'm so excited to talk to her. Have a listen.
If the Democrats replace Joe Biden with Kamala Harris or with any other candidate, will they have a better chance at beating Trump? I don't know, and neither do you. We can't tell from this vantage point. But if Joe Biden were running against Donald Trump today, he would lose and likely lose badly if the polls are accurate.
The full conversation is out now, and you'll want to hear it. Find it wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow On with Kara Swisher for more kick-ass conversations like this one.
This is a public service announcement from Unexplainable.
A yawn. One simple action connects you across species, across millions of years of history. You are a llama, an English bull terrier, a little kitty cat, a Tasmanian devil. Because yawning is a secret superpower. You can change the temperature of your own brain. And if you're feeling distracted, a yawn might be just what you need. So stop stifling your yawns.
Oh, God.
Open wide and yawn with pride. Don't hog all the yawning for yourself.
I can't stop. I can't stop.
Share your yawns with your family, with your friends. Yawn at your teachers.
Who just did that?
Get your teachers yawning back at you. Start an infinite loop of yawns.
This week on Unexplainable, why we yawn and why you're probably yawning right now. Follow Unexplainable wherever you find podcasts.
Everybody at the barking. Today Explained is back with Charlie HCX and hashtag Brittany Spanos from Rolling Stone. Friends, community, when you guys look at the songs of the summer, do the songs tell a story?
I think there are a couple of really great narratives going on right now in especially the top 10 of the charts in a way that I feel like has been more entertaining than the past few summers. Mm. I think we're seeing a lot of artists who have really strong fandoms who have existed for a really long time. You know, Shaboozey's been making music for years now. Sabrina Carpenter's, this is like about to be her sixth album. Chapel Roan was signed to a major label, dropped from a major label, re-signed to a new one, and, you know, released her debut album. Hozier has his first number one, and we all remember Take Me to Church. Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your life. That song is from over a decade ago. It's a lot of really great sort of narratives happening of artists who have been hustling for a really long time, who, you know, either had peaks before and are coming back. I mean, we're seeing this with Charlie XCX and Tinashe as well, who aren't necessarily in the top 10 because charts aren't the only metric, but are having really great sort of viral successes and moments. We're seeing a lot of artists who just kind of have curated a great fandom and have cultivated that over years, toured, hustled, released music, and just happened to have these like incredible breaks simultaneously at once.
Yeah, I feel like we have moved past the moment where every biggest song is a sudden breakout on TikTok, overnight success. The reality is, if you want to have a big pop career, you need a community which is backing you. I think Brittany's totally right on. This is the summer where we are seeing and realizing the gains of a lot of hard work.
That we espresso. I feel like the industry has adjusted poorly to the streaming age. I mean, we all know that. Like every artist knows that. And I feel like there's been a big lack of artist development in a lot of ways. You know, we've seen a lot of artists who have a viral hit, who have that one moment, and then the industry and labels don't really know how to keep that going or how to process that sort of like, we found this artist on TikTok, on YouTube, on Instagram, on, you know, whatever. And like, we turn this into this big moment. Where does the album go from there? Where does the next song go from there? So I feel like it's kind of a big case for artist development and kind of putting resources into that, because these artists have done it on their own. You know, a lot of them have been working towards this for a long time without getting the same sort of like marketing or kind of promotion or support from the major label system that other kind of flash in the pan artists have had over the last decade. And they've created those fandoms from scratch. They built them from the ground up just by touring a lot and from releasing music that made sense to them.
There is something else going on this summer that I want to talk about. Brittany mentioned it briefly. It's lime green. It's slightly out of focus. It's Brat. I feel like the popularity of the new Charlie XCX album only backs up my theory that Song of the Summer is a thing of the past, because If you're terminally online, this is Brat Summer. And if you're in Los Angeles, the summer belongs to Kendrick. If you're into country, maybe it's Shaboozy. If you're into Disney, maybe it's Sabrina Carpenter or something.
Sean, I think you've completely passed over Post Malone. Like, I feel like this is actually the summer of Post Malone. This is the season of Post Malone. Not only has he had a number one hit with Morgan Wallen, the song I Had Some Help. But he's also had hits as a featured artist with Beyoncé on Levi's Jeans. Girl, I wish I was Levi's Jeans, the way you popping on my phone. And Taylor Swift on Fortnite. He is inescapable.
I'm glad y'all brought up Post Malone, and in doing so also brought up Beyoncé and Taylor Swift, because Beyoncé, Taylor, and even like Dua Lipa, some of the biggest artists on streaming, some of the biggest artists touring right now, performing right now, releasing music right now, they've all released albums, but their names haven't really come up much. Is there something going on with like the old faves where they're just not charting the same way as the young blood?
I think these albums all did phenomenally well and were simply released earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, Beyoncé's album Cowboy Carter dominated the conversation for weeks. It broke Billboard Hot 100 records. It was definitely the album of the spring. This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. The song Texas Hold'em was number one for 2 weeks and was on the charts for 20 weeks. Mm-hmm. Taylor Swift's album, The Tortured Poets Department, also broke many records. All the songs were on the chart at the exact same moment. Dua Lipa might be the one example where her album Radical Optimism has not been as radically optimistic as she might have hoped. But she does have three really solid singles still on radio airplay: Illusion, Houdini, and Dance the Night from the Barbie soundtrack. I think she's one song away from being the most dominant artist again. She just needs the next big single to hit.
Yeah, and Dance the Night was such a big hit last summer, too. You know, they definitely all cycled the song of the summer conversations repeatedly for the last several years or decades, depending on which artist. But, you know, I think that people were kind of hungry for something new in a lot of ways, too. Like, I feel like we had sort of had a rough few years of new artists breaking through because of the pandemic, because of touring. And it's been such a big touring boom over the last couple of years where a lot of these artists have gotten boosted by being aligned with someone like Beyoncé, with Shaboozy being on the Beyoncé album and then now having his first number one hit, with Sabrina Carpenter going on the Eras tour with Taylor, with Chappell going on the Olivia tour. You know, all these artists kind of, it's almost like they are the ones now creating a new algorithm. Mm. They are the ones boosting these artists and are as much a reason for these songs of the summer that we're seeing, while kind of having their own albums that came out a little bit earlier.
Is it a bummer to you, too, that none of these songs that you're clearly deeply invested in will be the song of the summer? I think we established with Charlie that we are in the era of songs of the summer. Do you wish it could be just one song to rule them all?
I mean, we are our own little fiefdoms. We all have our own song of summer, so who cares? I mean, for me, it's definitely Charlie XCX, Von Dutch, no doubt. No one can stop that from happening.
Wow. The remix or the original, Charlie?
I'm an original.
Okay, respect, Brittany.
I mean, I'm going to argue that we've never been just a one song of the summer nation, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think, like, when you look back on the years, like, it's going to be whatever defined your summer, no matter what. I mean, we could go by the chart metrics, we can go by the conversation, but I think it's the beauty of, like, all of it is, like, yeah, there is sometimes those defining metrics that we can use, but no matter what, I think everyone kind of has their own song of the summer. And I think that's always what's kind of beautiful about it. Like, I always look back at my summers with like, okay, this song just happened to be playing at every party I was at. Or this is the song that I was like depressed listening to on the beach. You know, like it's like.
You can't be depressed at the beach, Brittany. It's the beach.
Sometimes, listen, I'm a Lana Del Rey girl through and through. And sometimes you are.
So what's your song this year? I don't think Lana's got any new bops, but I might have missed them.
She does have a new bop. I'm not sure if it's my song of the summer yet. But I think my song of the summer is probably, oh God, it's actually like really difficult. I think it's probably 365.
Wow.
Because Brad has really taken over my life in a crazy way, in a way that is kind of sick.
Oh, I can relate.
Okay. Here we go.
Charlie HCX, hashtag Brittany Spanos. It's been an honor. Thank you for joining us. I wish you both a safe and happy Brat summer.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Brittany Spanos writes about music for Rolling Stone. Her latest is titled Welcome to the Hannah Montana Generation of Pop Music. You can and should read it at rollingstone.com. Professor Charlie Harding makes Switched On Pop. You should be listening wherever you listen. Shadow Brat Amanda Llewellyn made our program today. We were fact-checked by Laura Bullard, who recently asked, wait, what is Brat? We were edited by Amina Alsadi, mixed by Patrick Boyd and Andrea Kristen's daughter, and hosted by Brat. Before we go, have you noticed that this election is the nuttiest one we've ever had? Like, no exaggeration, ever. Felon versus oldest president ever, who's constantly having to make the case for an even older presidency. We know you have questions about conventions, about delegates, about donors, about the legality of X or the probability of Y. And we want to know what those questions are, and we want to help you answer them in this wild and unpredictable moment. Give us a call, give us an email, tweet at us, 844-453-4448, 844-453-4448. Today Explained at Vox.com. Today _ Explained. Thank you.
If you've been enjoying this podcast, here's a look into what else is happening at New York Magazine. I'm Corey Sika, and I'm here with Reeves Wideman, who has written about the American obsession with NDAs. Where did they come from? Why are they everywhere? And are they good for anything besides covering up for abusers? After you poked around at NDAs for a while, do you see NDAs used mostly as tools of abuse and coercion? You see positive results? Like, where did you land on NDAs?
I think in most situations, it is used as a way to sort of claim power, but not even necessarily to like to do a bad thing. It's just kind of, it is this now this sort of boring standard tool in the toolbox of corporations or powerful people. But now it's being used on the people at the bottom. It's the warehouse workers at Amazon being made to sign them. Or like I was just trawling job listings while doing this story, and there were NDAs for forklift drivers and like people working in butcher shops. And I think on the one hand, it's just kind of like, well, I might as well. There's no downside for me to do this. But it is also just another way that you sort of keep your employees or people you get into a relationship with, that you sort of keep your thumb on them. So I do think it is, at the end of the day, the people who are giving them out by and large are trying to control someone.
Do you think that they're going to become standard for like literally every interaction and job interview and possibly relationship as well? Or do you think they're just finally going to die or become outlawed? Like, where do we go from here?
You know, it was corporations first, then it was celebrities, then it was just rich people who aren't famous, but they also want to protect their privacy. The next frontier is people like you and me. And are we going to start giving them to their partners? You know, I think some people are going to start experimenting with it. It doesn't take much to go online, download a free NDA and without even consulting a lawyer and hand it over to someone. I did, as a joke, send one to my girlfriend. She hasn't signed it yet, but I at least sent it. So
that's Reeves Wideman, who may or may not be single soon. You can read his work on NDAs in our beautiful print magazine in your own home or on nymag.com/lineup.